former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into hour two of the Lombardi Line. I'm Claudia Belafato here with the one and only Michael Lombardi. And Michael, we've talked a lot about NFL hoops. We're going to get back into both of those, be joined by Randy Mueller, former NFL GM, to talk all that and the news that we got today, which is the season opener between the Chiefs and the Ravens. And I think earlier I said that this total opened at 29.5. I wish it did, because I would have slammed the over. But no, it opened at 49.5 and quickly got bet down to 47 in the hook. The Chiefs, the three-point favorite. First, just initial reaction to these lines.
Well, I love the fact that the line got bet down immediately, which tells me that pro bettors are already looking for these numbers to come out. And as, you know, somebody who studies the league every single day, you've got to keep up on it. That's why subscribing to the VSiN guide and all those things help you, because it's hard for you to do a normal job and then keep up on the NFL. When you see money come in like this to move a number significantly, those are professional bettors that have an idea about both teams, and they've handicapped both teams going into the 2024 season. Hard to do if you're not keeping up on it. But here's what I do know. Both coaches are really good in opening games. They're both 4-1 over the last five seasons in terms of what they do in the opener. Both coaches spend a lot of time getting their teams ready for the opener. They have physical practices. They work the players hard during training camp. You can't overwork, but they'll have padded practices, and they're not trying to avoid injury. They're trying to get their team ready to play. So I think it'll make a great game, and I think it's going to be interesting. The questions you got to ask yourself, and I think why the under's coming in, Baltimore's going to run the ball, even though they didn't do it in the first game, in the playoff game, because they have Henry now. And then I think Kansas City's going to have to run the ball too. We're not sure about their offensive line, and we're certainly not sure about the wide receiving core.
And that's why we've seen this move down already by 2 points. Curious to see maybe if we'll see some buyback at some point. We can ask Randy about that, what he thinks, because we do have a very long time and we do have a full season. So reminder, we don't have to bet on this, but it's the first bit of action. We do want to jump into it. Luckily, though, we have playoffs going on right now, so you don't have to bet football because we have plenty of NBA, and you can bet game to game, you can bet props, you can also bet series prices, which I'll run through quick, Michael, then get your take on last night's games and moving forward for tonight. We have two good ones. Pacers right now, -120 favorites against the Knicks. You can grab the Knicks at plus money. The Mavs, -210 against the Thunder. Young squad could come back at +175. And the Celtics, there's no reason to bet them because they're -8,000. Cavs, though, if you have any faith at all, 22-1. Some great value there. And the Nuggets at -165, like we said earlier. 2 games ago was the time to bet them at plus money, around 5-1. -165, you are chasing the number. Biggest takeaways from over the weekend, Michael?
Well, I think, look, we know the Knicks were exhausted, right? And I think eventually we kind of felt they were going to hit that wall. They shot 33%. They couldn't make a three-pointer. They got themselves – Indiana made the run, and then the Knicks shot themselves out of it by shooting 7-for-37 from the three-point line. But I think this is a time to buy New York, Claudia, because I don't think New York's going to be dead. I think New York's a tough-minded team that has great culture and great character, and they're going to fight back. Everybody's going to think, well, they're exhausted. Well, okay, they are, but Hart played 24 minutes, right? Brunson played 31. Hartenstein played 22. They'll be as well rested for this next game in the Garden, which we know is hard to play. I expect them to play really well in the next game. I think this goes 6. I think it could go 7. If they get Ojanobi back, then all of a sudden they're a different team again. So I'm optimistic about it. I would take the money here. I don't know what to do on the Minnesota-Denver one. To me, the way Denver won that game by shooting 57% from the field and shooting lights out with Bron making 3 out of 4 three-pointers, where's Minnesota's defense? That's what we always count on, is Minnesota to be able to clamp down and win defensively like they did the first 2 games. We have not seen that in Minneapolis. So the heart of a champion prevailed in the city, and we'll see if it can continue. Game 5 is going to be one of the hardest games Minnesota's ever going to play.
These are some of the toughest games to bet on, too, because like you said, I think back to Heat culture. Everybody always talks about Heat culture, but it feels like the Knicks sort of have a Knicks culture. Am I wrong to say that? That's what we're saying, yep. right? When we talked about the Celtics earlier, the issue a lot of fans are saying is they don't have, you know, the dog in them. They don't really have that mindset that we're hearing from the Anthony Edwards and the Jalen Brunsons of the world. Is Knicks culture a thing now?
I think it is. I really do. They believe in themselves. They have faith in one another. They're not offering any excuses why they lost. They played poorly, and they'll correct it. And I think Indiana is a team that can go up and down. And I think there was a chance the Knicks could have won game. They could have won game five, right? They had a chance. I know Brunson thought he was fouled on the three-point attempt at the end of the game, which he wasn't, but they're right there. They had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter against Indiana in that game, and they lost it. Now, maybe because their legs got tired. But I think you throw this game out. I think you're a short memory team, and you believe in your culture. You believe that you're going to shoot better than 15% from the three-point line. They've been one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league. They had a bad day. That's a bad day. I think if the book is willing to give you plus money, I wouldn't look at twice. I would take it because I think the Knicks, you hit the nail on the head. They have great culture. And culture, when it gets tough, matters.
It does, and that's the fear for a lot of Celtics fans. That's why I look at this future price on Boston, and it's steep. But once you get past this round, I even felt it when we got past the Heat. I said, okay, it's going to get a little more worrisome as we go on, and Tatum just sort of shrugs his shoulders when they get blown out when they're 13.5-point favorites. Like, aren't you supposed to be a little angry? I don't want him banging his hands on the table, but it is a little worrisome when you have 22-year-olds out here smiling, saying, you know, we're ready. It just feels like a different mindset. And then Joe Mazzulla is still a young head coach. So I don't know. I won't talk too much about Boston because I'm a homer. But we do have to talk about this next game coming up for them because they are 8.5-point
favorites.
Yeah,
true. You are a homer.
Come on. Not really.
Homers can complain. Only homers That's can true. Complain about their team when they're 8.5-point favorites. I mean, really, seriously, only homer. Like, really, I mean, you have nothing to worry about. The Knicks will probably be exhausted. Indiana will be exhausted. The challenge you have is, can they beat the Western team if they get there, when they get there?
That is true. So then it sounds like you're pretty confident in Boston. I still am hesitant to lay the 8.5. I know they usually bounce back in ways that other teams don't. However, I'm still hesitant. I don't lean taking the 8.5 because the Cavs, I don't think, quite have enough depth. It's probably a prop game for me or just to stay away, but it was good to see Tatum in that bounce back game on Saturday. 33 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists. You had Brown with 28, 9 boards. The issue for me sometimes, though, is if Derek White's not hitting his shots and you're not getting a ton of support, you have to combine for 27 points in the third quarter like Brown and Tatum did. And if they don't, sometimes they do let the game get away from them and they take their foot off the brake. So take on this game specifically for tonight, 8.5, which way are you going?
I'm going to think that, you know, when I watched the game last time, it was clear to me that the Celtics are by far the better team. And for the Cavs to win, the Celtics have to play poorly, and the Cavs still have to play their best game. I mean, Donovan Mitchell's been on a roll. We know that. He's been great. But at the end of the day, I think the Celtics understand this is the moment to put the Cavs away, to go back to Boston 3-1. I like Boston here. The numbers kind of favor them. It's come way down because of that loss, so you're getting it under 10. I just don't think the Cavs, without Jared Allen, have enough to be able to withstand it. And their bench has gotten shorter. They can't really, if they're not making threes, I really believe this is going to be a hard game. I just think the Celtics are just more talented, and they'll take the game over.
I think you're right. I've been live betting this team a lot, too. If they go down early and that number comes down, that's the right time to jump on it. I want to know what's on your mind, but first, just quickly, Thunder Mavs. Mavs opened the 2.5-point favorite, got bet down to 1.5, seeing some ones pop up. So Thunder money in. Do you agree with the market move? Which side are you on?
Well, this is a tough handicap game, too, because the referees let them play like, oh, my gosh, it's like football out there, right? I mean, they beat the crap out of Luka on Saturday afternoon, you know, and so that's a hard thing to handicap. But Kyrie Irving, if you're going to leave him one-on-one, he's the best one-on-one player. And I think Josh Giddey, when they go and they, you know, he's not able to rebound like they need to as a power forward, and P.J. Washington gives them an advantage. I like the Mavs. I think the Mavs are a good team. I think Luka's been handicapped by getting no calls whatsoever. I would lean towards the Mavs because I think that with those two players they have, they're just too good.
And SGA has no help whatsoever, which we can talk about another day. But right now, I need to know, Michael, what's on your mind?
Well, I love the draft, and I love the NBA draft because everybody, because the lottery is, oh, we're going to get, you know, they had to put a lottery in so teams couldn't tank to get the first overall pick. And then, so what happens? It backfires on everybody, right? I mean, here you are, you're the Detroit Pistons, you win, what, 14 games? And now you're picking fifth in the draft. You know, you're the Charlotte Hornets, you win 21 games, you're picking sixth. The Portland Trailblazers win 21 games, they're picking seventh. They get handicapped because they're trying to prevent teams from losing, which is interesting. But this is a draft where I'm told there's no elite player in the draft, a lot of good players. So maybe you'll get the same guy at five that you might have picked at one, which makes it even. But also, it's a European draft. They say the top five players in this draft might all come from Europe or some foreign country. So it'll be fun to watch. But we know the NBA draft is never about instantaneous. It always takes a little bit of time. But it's always fun to watch. And the Hawks, to me, where they are as a team, you know, with Quinn Snyder running their program, it's going to be interesting to see how they redefine their team. Do they trade Trae Young this offseason, or are they going to add compliments to their team?
Hawks had a 3% chance of getting that number one overall pick, and they got it. Poor wow, Detroit, right? Man. The poor get poorer. We'll be right back, and we'll be joined by former NFL GM Randy Mueller to talk some more NFL. Don't go anywhere on the Lombardi Line.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time only, we're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price, normally priced at $240. You can now grab your subscription for just $199. Sign up today will also give you extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code Lombardi. Joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, former NFL GM, now analyst for The Athletic, Randy Mueller. Randy, thanks for joining us. We got some exciting news. We know what the first game of the season is going to be, a little AFC title rematch between the Chiefs and the Ravens. First reaction to that one.
Well, I'm not surprised, as I'm sure Mike's not either. They tend to make these kind of matchups on purpose, and that makes sense. These are two really good teams. One has undergone a total transfusion of talent in the Ravens in the exodus of coaches and players, so we're anxious to see where they're at. But having been involved in this opening game before, it is a playoff-like atmosphere, and that's what the league wants to make of it. They put a lot of bells and whistles into the presentation of such a game, so I think they could roll out about anyone and people would watch it, but it'll be a fun game without a doubt.
Randy, so many teams, you know, obviously we could spend a lifetime talking about Super Bowl winning GM Terry Fontenot's decision to draft Michael Penix and that whole colossal. But I want to start with the Raiders and Bowers. Like, how did you feel about that pick, especially considering the Raiders couldn't get up to get Penix and the Raiders' needs in the offensive line?
Yeah, I'll be honest, Mike. I struggle with the fact that a tight end is that worthy to be picked that high. And I don't know how your prior experience leads you, but mine is always that tight ends at some point are going to need to be schemed open for most cases. Now, we all know about Kelce. We all know about Kittle, some of these other guys who can get open regardless of scheme and play call. But I think for the most part, tight ends are tight ends. And I find a lack of value in picking one up that high. For years, as we've seen, tight ends usually go late first round, early second round, and that was the best tight ends in each particular draft class. So I struggled a little bit just from a value standpoint of, I know he's a real player, and I'm not disputing that at all, but it's a tight end position that I just don't have the quality value in spending a top 10 pick on.
So, Randy, you saw it as a high pick in terms of a tight end in that first round. How about six quarterbacks in the first round? Yeah. Of course, everybody talked about Caleb Williams and those top three guys. Is there a quarterback not named Caleb Williams that you think has the potential to have a C.J. Stroud-type rookie season?
Well, I think the one thing about these other quarterbacks are is they have potential. That is identifiable when you watch the tape. The guy for me that has enormous upside, but we haven't seen a lot of it, is J.J. McCarthy. I understand there are a lot of critics about his play because of the results of Michigan. How, for some reason, I guess we don't want to win national championships, but his numbers aren't there. The media, the people on the outside struggle with evaluating some of these quarterbacks, I think, if the numbers don't back it up. But my eyes just didn't lie to me. I just think there's a lot of things that this kid does that I think his best days are ahead of him at the pro level, especially when you put him in an offense like Minnesota has with Kevin O'Connell, who I think gives his quarterbacks a lot of answers. So for me, he was the one guy that I saw the ceiling being the highest in. Maybe he's not the most ready right now, but I think with them signing Sam Darnold and not having to play McCarthy early on, I think that's a good combination of success for future years for the Vikings.
You know, Pete Carroll was there 14 years up in the Pacific Northwest where you are. He won, you know, went to the Super Bowl, won a Super Bowl, lost a Super Bowl, you know, was very successful. I believe he had a Hall of Fame career there based on the criteria that I wrote about in Football Done Right. But now we transition to Mike McDonald. When I look at what Seattle's done this offseason, knowing they won 9 games with zero defense last year, couldn't stop the run, really couldn't get control of the game, gave up 30 points to the Pittsburgh in Week 17 at home where they're only 20-13. You've been there before, Randy. You know how loud that crowd is. Do you get the sense that Seattle could be a sleeping team under the 7.5 win total that everybody keeps talking about for next season?
Oh, I think so. And I think the Seahawks people would probably agree, Mike. I think there's a lot of faction of people on the inside and outside that believe they've underachieved the last couple of years, whether it's defensively, at least struggling in the first half of the last couple of seasons. I'll give Pete credit for fixing it by season's end, but their defense has struggled. And you said it, stopping the run has not been an issue, has been a big issue for them. And so I think they'll be better in that regard. I think the scheme change will allow them to fit the players that they bring in a little better. I felt like they became a hodgepodge of defensive personnel that really didn't fit what Pete wanted to do the last couple of years. So, yeah, I think there. And I also think there's a little bit of an under-the-current quarterback competition with regard to Sam Howell coming from the Commanders. I don't think that's cut and dried either. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. But I do think they are in a position where they could make a pretty strong run for a wild card spot.
Randy, it sounds like maybe a little quarterback competition in New England, too, or maybe at least just Brissett's going to get some reps before May goes out there, because Mayo doesn't sound too keen on him starting as a rookie too early. He says there's still a lot for him to work on. Curious what your take is on what New England did in the offseason and the draft. I don't know if you like to give grades, but if you had to give a grade for New England, where are you at with them?
Yeah, I struggle with the grades because I like to actually see guys play before we determine if they've been picked in a good spot or not. But I think Jacoby Brissett's going to be their quarterback. I've seen enough of Drake May to think, in my opinion anyway, that he's a down the line, a little bit of a project guy. A lot of things, and I agree with Mayo, what he said the other day, is a lot of things he has to clean up. I get it. I do think there's some ceiling, but I struggle with the fact that everybody that evaluates Drake May, the first thing they often say is, 6'4", 230 pounds. I get it. He fits the cookie cutter mode for size, strength, all that stuff. But there's a lot to his game, I think, that still has to be developed. I just see a lot of people from watching the North Carolina film, and I don't know if you concur, Mike, is that I saw a lot of people running open, and I saw them miss too many times. And the margin for error in the NFL is not great. And so when you miss guys, you may never get a chance to come back to them, sometimes for a week or two, in that the games disappear on you fast when you can run 60, 65 plays on a particular Sunday. And I think Drake struggled with that initially.
I agree completely, and I think it's not fair to the other guys. Drake's not ready to play, and it's not fair for him, and it's not fair for his teammates to put him in there and rush him in there and play. You know, whereas in Chicago, your thoughts on Caleb Williams being announced the starter immediately, and do you feel like the Chicago's good enough up front to protect him in terms of giving him the time he needs to become a really good passer?
I think it's a great point. I think Caleb stood heads and tails above the rest of this group of quarterbacks. So I don't have a problem with him naming him the guy. I think it would be almost disingenuous because really, I think he's a really good player who's ready to play in the NFL. But I concur with you, Mike. The thing that doesn't make me feel, you know, warm and fuzzy about Chicago is up front. And their own assessment of it isn't really quite the same as mine. I think they still struggle at right tackle. I think they're going to have a hard time keeping him upright. I understand they've added some people around the perimeter now. I mean, I love Keenan Allen. I love these other receivers, Odunze, that they brought in. That's great. But they're going to have to find a way to increase the running game and keeping the quarterback upright. Because I think what could happen with Caleb is if they force him to run around, which we all know he can. I mean, let's face it, he did it at USC for the last 2 years and really carried them. If they put him in that same mode, his development will be held back because of it. So at some point, they need to find some structure. And that usually starts with an offensive line that not only can keep the quarterback upright, but can knock him back a little bit so that we can have a running.
Randy, Michael mentioned this off the top. I'm not letting you get away without talking about Atlanta Falcons. What were you thinking when they took Michael Penix Jr. at number 8 after guaranteeing $100 million to an aging Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, I've tried for 3 weeks now to make sense of it. I really can't. It doesn't make any more sense to me today than it did on draft day. I was shocked at the pick myself. I think it's this, and I'll be interesting to hear if Mike agrees with me or not. They have swung and missed at quarterback several times over the last few years, really been the last 3 or 4 years. And I thought their commitment to Kirk Cousins was just throw money at something that we can't fix on our own. So they did that. But the Penix one, to me, I would struggle with from this standpoint more than any of the dialogue that I've heard, is that when I have to go down through that locker room as a GM, I can't really look guys in the eye and say, hey, I did good for you today, guys. I got your quarterback that we may not play for 3 or 4 more years. I always struggle with the reaction that I would get from my veterans who think we can win right now and want to win right now. That they don't really like to hear that future plan of down the road 3 or 4 years. And that's if I was Terry, I would struggle to just look my own guys in the eye and say, hey, I know we could have got a pass rusher. I know we could have got this for our defense that has proven to struggle over the last couple of years. But instead, we locked down the second quarterback.
Randy Mueller, we appreciate you very much. Former NFL GM,
great
now
job,
analyst
Randy.
For The Athletic. You can find his work over on Twitter at @RandyMueller_. Up next, it's time to step into Michael's office. Some words of wisdom. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Today on the VSiN website, we have the best bets for today's NBA playoff slate from Zachary Cohen and Jonathan Von Tobel, plus a new article breaking down Caitlin Clark's MVP odds and season props as we get ready for the start of the WNBA season. With Michael Lombardi, I'm Claudia Bellafato, and I have your calendar out here, Michael. Packed schedule, lots of people needing to hear your words of wisdom, starting with some rookie quarterbacks. Minicamps kicked off over the weekend. We got lots of good sounds from that, lots of quotes. Matt Eberflus made it clear. Caleb Williams, the day one starters, others, not so sure. So tell me, what is the most important thing for rookie quarterbacks when it comes to needing to focus on during and after this rookie minicamp?
I think like all players, whether you're a rookie quarterback, whether you're a free agent defensive back, you have to learn how to transition from an amateur to a professional. And that's something we all have to do when we leave college and enter the workforce, right? College is fun. You have a lot of time on your hands. You're not accountable other than your grades and studying, but you have a lot of free time. When you become a pro, you have to dedicate your life to your craft, and you have to take it seriously. And I think when you look at Zach Wilson in New York, his inability to focus and concentrate was on the back page of the New York Post more than he was for who he was dating than what he was doing in the classroom. And so you've got to really become a pro. You've got to really take time to understand how to study, how to prepare, how to fundamentally work your technique, and also how to maximize your reps. Tom Brady tells a great story. Tom Brady, when he was a sophomore at Michigan, he would only get about 2 reps of practice, and it was frustrating for him. And so what Brady did is he went to the coach and he said, "Coach, look, I think I probably need to transfer." Now, understand, Brady wasn't highly recruited coming out of San Mateo. He had offers to Michigan and Cal. That's it. And there was no NIL and there's no transfer portal when he was making this call. And so he went to the coach and said, "I think I need to transfer. I'm only getting 2 reps of practice." And the coach said to him, "Look, Tom, you got to make those 2 reps the greatest reps of all time. And you got to take those 2 reps seriously. You can't make a mistake, and you've got to put your heart and soul. You've got to become a pro on those 2 reps." And so Brady being Brady, he made those 2 reps his Super Bowl. He got in the huddle. He commanded the huddle. He was able to know everything that was going on. And sooner rather than later, 2 reps became 4 reps. 4 reps became 8 reps. 8 reps became the starter. And so you can't get caught up in what you don't have. You've got to maximize what you do have. And so that's the advice. And you can't be impatient. You just can't be impatient. It's a long season. A little bit like joining the Navy SEALs. The guy who sprints or the girl who sprints first to dinner usually is the first one out. It's a long marathon.
Drake May, are you listening? Take notes. Michael Lombardi is giving you Tom Brady's step-by-step how to become the greatest of all time. Let's go to hoops. Poor Frank Vogel. Fired by the Phoenix Suns after just 1 season, Michael. 5-year deal he signed. He said he felt good about it heading into the offseason. And then he gets booted. They finished 6th in the West, finished 49-33, of course, swept in the first round by the T-Wolves. Really curious to see what words of wisdom you have for him after working so many years in the NFL, dealing with the ins and outs of head coaches.
Well, I think the hard part for you, Frank, is the fact that, you know, when they tell you they give you 4 years, you know they don't. And when you're coaching Kevin Durant at his age, when you trade for Bradley Beal, at his age, everything's about winning. And to get swept is embarrassing. And I think anytime an owner gets embarrassed, then he's going to do what he wants to do. And they're billionaires because they don't want to be embarrassed. And they have more money than they know what to do with. So giving you the $20 million is no big deal. They'll feel like they'll offset it when you take another job somewhere someday. Now, if you want to sit out for 4 years, your probably career's over. They know you won't do that. They know you'll be back at work. So I think what you have to do the next time is you've got to be really patient and stay in your lane and not be caught up with being a head coach. Maybe just go be an assistant somewhere and kind of follow along, because this is a hectic world. And when you take on a team with high expectations and you don't meet those expectations, there's no chance in hell you could have felt secure. I know you're a Jersey guy right down the road here in Wildwood Catholic. You had to know that when the owner of that team was swept 4-0, James Jones, Bartlestein, the president, all the people involved, they were going to look for your head because they can't change the cap. They can't get rid of those guys. They only have about 3 players they could equally trade. So they traded in the coach, and you paid a price.
Already replaced by Mike Budenholzer. All right, next, more hoops. Jalen Brunson. Game 4 was not pretty against the Pacers. 32-point beat down. He had a playoff low 18 points. What do you say to him heading into this next game?
The next game. Like, I don't think I need to say anything to Jalen Brunson, because Jalen Brunson already knows it's the next game. Jalen Brunson already knows that it's about what we do on Tuesday night at the Garden that counts. All this talk is noise. Everybody's saying we're exhausted. No one knows if we're exhausted or not. Nobody's been to our practices. Nobody knows how Josh Hart feels. Nobody knows how Hartenstein feels. They just think we're exhausted. And if you let them believe that, that's on you. So what I believe Brunson will do is block out the noise. He'll rally his team because he's got great culture within their building. And they will play their asses off on Tuesday night and show the world they're not tired, that they're not capable of being tired. They're capable of missing shots, no question, which is they missed a bunch of them on Sunday night, Sunday afternoon. But they're not capable of missing them again. And I think they'll rally around it because they have great culture. And one day rest can really lend itself, because really, in reality, they didn't play. Josh Hart played 28 minutes or 24 minutes the other night. Brunson played 31. That's like a half a game for those guys. So I expect them to come back. And they don't need me to tell them. because the noise, they're used to that. They'll avoid the noise at all time.
Next culture, baby. All right, your next appointment is with the Joe Burrow, Cincinnati Bengals, suffering a season-ending wrist injury last year. He's been back to work, getting healthy, says he's strong, feeling better than ever, has a new diet, all that jazz. What do you say to him heading into this season?
I say, Joe, you can win MVP. Just play within yourself. And the most important thing for you as the Cincinnati Bengals, you got to start fast. You got to get Zach Taylor and your team to play better than starting the year 3-4. You're not going to be able to catch up in the North. The AFC has too many good teams. And I think you got to start fast. You got to start with confidence. And I think it's got to start with a really good training camp. You've got to be able to devote yourself to that training camp to make the most of it, because it's a long season. I get that. And I know you want to play your best football at the end of the year, like you've done the two times you went to the Super Bowl and once you went to the AFC Conference Championship game. But you're going to need to put yourself in position where you have a home field and you can't give away games in September because you're not ready to play. And the team's going to count on you to do that. And I think that's going to be really important.
You mentioned MVP. I'm looking at comeback player of the year at 2-1. He's behind Aaron Rodgers, the favorite at even money. I think that's a play I'd make. Right, Michael?
Yep. I would too. And I would tell him, look, you got to come back. You know, everybody, you got great skill. You've improved the offensive line. This is your year and you can do it.
All right, last one. Rory McIlroy blasted past Xander Schauffele to win the Wells Fargo over the weekend, winning by 5 strokes after shooting a final round 65. So how's he going to follow up, Michael? He's in your office. PGA Championship kicks off Thursday. He's second in the odds at 7-1 behind Scheffler, the 4-1 favorite. He keeps pushing these odds to get shorter. What do you have to say to McIlroy?
I think McIlroy's got to stop focusing on majors and just focus on playing one hole at a time. I think we all focus on him winning another major, getting that, you know, getting the four majors in his belt. And he's had a hard time doing that. And I think ultimately the pressure of trying to do that weighs on him, because as we've seen at the Masters recently, he's not been able to play consistently for four rounds. And I think ultimately that's what he has to do. He's got to take a step back and focus just on the day's round, stay in the moment. I think the one thing great golfers have is that stoic behavior where they just go on to the next shot, to the next shot, and don't worry about the end result. The process matters more than the end. And I think that's what McIlroy's got to do, and he's got to have a hot putter. He can't give away strokes like he did at Augusta.
And he won the most recent of his four major titles, 2014 PGA Championship, here at Valhalla, same location as this weekend's major. If you're looking at the odds, anybody else on this board you like? We see Koepka at 14-1, Schauffele, who I just mentioned, at 12-1. Or maybe do we just go Rory McIlroy top five, plus 175? Maybe not outright, but to finish top five, that feels like a safer play to me.
You know, Claudia, I was all over Koepka in the Masters. I don't understand why he doesn't win the Masters. I mean, he hits it long. He hits it far. It's an open course. He didn't putt well. But I believe that. I believe that that's the right tournament for him to win. So I would bet Koepka in these odds at this number, because we know he plays well and he's playing well.
All right, 14-1. That's a nice little payout. We'll be back. Show's about over. This flew by, Michael. We got some more hoops to talk about as we round out the Lombardi line here on this fine Monday.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at the DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSiN. Only at DraftKings, the crown is yours. As we wrap up this Monday Lombardi Line show, we have a pro tip for you all, and that is don't fall to recency bias, Michael. We said it a few times with these basketball games, but it's true. A lot of people do it. How can they avoid that?
Right. I think to me, everybody talked about the heart of the Denver Nuggets. We saw that, the champion, right? The Knicks have great heart too. Like, don't rule them off. You're going to get a good number for the Knicks on the plus side. And look, let's face it, the pro athletes don't get tired. They don't get tired. Like, they shot poorly. Their legs may have not been the same. But when they play in that garden and the momentum is flowing, and I know a lot of people in the analytical community don't believe there's such a thing called momentum, which I think is completely ridiculous. When that momentum gets going and they shoot the ball better, they'll play well. So recency bias is the number one thing. We see it all the time, Claudia, in the NFL. This team won last week. They're going to win again this week. And every week it's a different matchup. Every week it's a different style of game. The Knicks will be ready to play on Tuesday night, I have no doubt.
As Anthony Edwards said with his smile, it's all good, man. We're excited for the next one. They're professional players. It all makes sense. Before we talk about some of the lines for tonight and moving forward with the futures, we have to talk about some breaking news that just came out from Adam Schefter. Michael, Antoine Winfield Jr., now the highest paid defensive back in NFL history. He and the Bucks reached an agreement, four-year, $84.1 million deal. First reaction on this, and this really is the first reaction because we just got this minutes ago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it was something they've been working on for a long time. And obviously they tagged Winfield. They wanted to keep him, and they keep him around. It gives their secondary. The strength of this team is their defense, and especially if they're going to go young at corner, right? They got Jamal Dean still there. They traded Carlton Davis to the Detroit Lions. So the strength of the team is the secondary. And one of the things I think what we saw in Cincinnati last year, Claudia, was – when you don't have a safety that can communicate and keep people aligned and get things organized, which Cincinnati didn't have last year. They went with Dax Hill. They let Von Bell go. They let Jesse Bates go, sign a huge contract with Atlanta. You lose continuity within your framework of your defense, and it affected Cincinnati, and I don't think Tampa was going to let that happen. Speaking of Cincinnati, though, Claudia, Trey Hendrickson, who was requesting trades, trying to challenge Mike Brown, which is unchallengeable, and I've said it many times on the show, like, you're not getting Mike Brown, the owner of the Cincinnati Bengals, to do something he doesn't want to do. And so you can request all the trading you want to do to get a new contract. He ain't listening. Hendrickson was smart. He showed up at their OTA day today.
Curious to see what they do with T. Higgins as well with that franchise tag. Lots of NFL news that are going to be coming out over the next few weeks. Luckily, we have a lot of time to talk about it, but not a ton of time because the clock is ticking for these NBA games tonight, Michael. I feel like we've really gone through the majority of storylines here. I want to talk about some player props in a second. But first of all, the Celtics laying 8.5 against the Cavs. We've talked a lot about if the Celtics have, you know, the dog in them. I don't know if that, I feel like that's lack of a better term, but do they have the dog in them to cover these big spreads like 8.5? Now, this has come down from what we saw in game two at 13.5. We saw this around game three as well. Feeling on a side total or maybe a player prop here, Jason Tatum, 27.5. You have Donovan Mitchell, 29.5. Any of those stand out to you?
Well, I think Mitchell going over 29.5 is always, you know, one thing about Mitchell, he's gotten his points. Look, I think one thing we've learned about the Celtics so far in their two opponents that they faced, once they get some cold water put on their face, they really rally and they play with some seriousness. I expect them to do that tonight. I mean, they don't want to give up a little bit of hope. When you're playing on the opponent's court, you've got to nail it down. And what they were able to do in that third quarter and Cleveland taking so many of those bad threes that they were taking, they weren't open. They're trying to get back in the game. And all of a sudden, a 12-point lead became a 24-point lead. So I kind of think that's going to happen. Look, the one thing about a seven-game series is the best team typically always wins. You know, in the NCAA tournament, you know, one game, one upset, that happens. But in a seven-game series, the dominance of one team shows up. And I think what Spoelstra did trying to manufacture a win was great. Bickerstaff manufacture a win because of Donovan Mitchell. I don't think they can do it twice.
I want to talk about this Thunder Mavs series, and we've said how hard it has been to handicap, and that's sort of reflected in the line here too, watching how this has moved around and how it's still moving, because it opened 2.5 consensus. There's ones out there, there's 1.5s out there, there's 2.5. So clearly the books and the market alike are confused on which side to take here. You have this young, exciting OKC Thunder squad with SGA having the world on his shoulders up against a Mavs squad that may be a little bit deeper and a little bit more experienced, but they're banged up. Luka seems to have everything wrong with him, both knees, ankle. You saw him land on his back in that last game. So I look at this and I throw my hands up, Michael. I'm tempted to just go and watch this game. And maybe if one team comes out stronger but falls behind, try and grab them at plus money. I'm lost because I do love watching both squads, but it's a tough game to handicap.
Yeah. And it's a hard game. I mean, look, if I were to tell you on Saturday that the Thunder shot 47% from the field, right, and that the Mavericks missed, shot 64% from the free throw line, you would say, well, they had a win, right? Well, they got out rebounded 48-41, and the inside power game, and you can just see Jason Kidd's strategy is attacking the rim with PJ Washington. He's forcing them because, you know, Giddey's not a power forward with great size. You know, he's a shooting guard trying to play the power forward. Holmgren's the center, who's really the power forward. So it's kind of convoluted. They need another big guy. Now, fortunately, they have, I think, the 14th pick overall in the draft this year, and they have picks that are just going to keep coming and coming and coming. So the Thunder are going to rectify this problem. But the bench of the Mavericks, and I think what you can't underestimate is Kyrie Irving. I mean, this guy is a legit. I mean, you've seen him. You've been in Boston before. This guy is dynamic, and he can take over games. He can take over. And when Luka's struggling like he did at 7-for-17 from the floor, you know, Kyrie can come in and really take over the game. And if they're going to put the pressure on him, and if Dort's going to guard Luka the way he guarded him in the first game, in the game on Saturday. I mean, I thought Dort should have fouled out in the first quarter the way he was physical with him. If they let him play like that, then, you know, I think Oklahoma City's got a chance here. But I think the better team is Dallas. I lean Dallas, but I'm with you. It's a tough game to predict.
I have to agree with you. And I think regardless of who comes out of this series, there's a silver lining for both teams. For the OKC Thunder, I don't think anybody expected them really to get this far. And the fact that you have SGA and you're going to have SGA, put the people around him that he needs, and then you'll get much further than round two. But just look at that last game, right, Michael? 31 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, 5 blocks of steal, like I mentioned. Only 3 other guys in double digits. Only 2 other players in double digits for this postseason when it comes to averaging. So I think Thunder fans can see the silver lining in that, knowing that the future is bright with SGA. And the Mavs, it's sort of two-sided. One, it's good to see Kyrie step in and contribute when it comes to points, because then Luka doesn't have to be the only scorer, and he can sort of facilitate a little bit more. We saw him playing some defense, which is world groundbreaking and great to see. But the other side of that is, okay, we finally brought somebody in to help Luka, but they still can't get past the second round. So I see both sides for both fan bases. But I'm curious if you agree with me on this Thunder side of things, even if they lose. I think you can consider this a pretty good season for them.
You know, I think that's the kind of the broader stroke view of it. But I think when you're in the competition, you want to win it, right? And I think they're only going to grow from this, and they're going to understand what their weaknesses are, which I think they really do. I think Presti does a remarkable job of how to build the team and understanding what he's going to need next season. So, yeah, I think for Dallas, look, you know, P.J. Washington, getting Gadford, that trade really propelled them. They've been as good defensively since the All-Star break as any team in the National Basketball Association. They've been really good. They signed Jason Kidd to an extension. They've got 2 legitimately great players, and they've added some really good supporting cast. Look, the Lively pick who they've got from the Thunder when they traded with him has been really a good player. And when Alexander's your leading rebounder, right, what does that tell you about your inside game? And as big as Holmgren is and as long as he is, you know, you need some power inside. And I think that's the one piece that Oklahoma City's missing.
I think you're right. Right now you can get OKC at plus 175 to win this series. The Cavs 22-1. Don't bet Boston. Don't lay that money, please. Pacers minus 120 favorites against the Knicks. You can get it even money. Michael likes that number. And the Nuggets, people, you can't chase it. You had the opportunity to bet him at plus money. It's minus 165 now. I get it. You might think there's value. I have to say, I don't think so. Michael, 2 hours absolutely flew by with you. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Claudia.
I hope you all enjoyed.
Appreciate you coming.
I hope you all enjoyed this show. Of course, of course. Anytime. Sharp Money next on VSiN. And you can catch the Lombardi Line tomorrow. Stormy Bonantoni. We'll be back. Enjoy your Monday.